It's thinking. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Monday, so it's time for the Wrestling Inc. Monday Night Raw after show, and have we got a show for you. We've got three tsunamis, two new number one contenders, and one must-see after show. Let's get it started. I'm Jack Farmer, being joined by Emily May and Justin Labar. Justin, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling pretty damn good. We got wrestling to talk about. NFL football was fun to watch this weekend. Very much like just a hop to Wednesday. Let's just get through tomorrow as a country. And, you know, so I mean, a lot of feelings.
Yeah. There's a lot of emotions, Justin. I know Jack and I are coming off of covering Crown Jewel, so we're just like in a wrestling mood lately. But we do have to make it through tomorrow. I'm feeling that too, Justin.
Yeah, I think we're just going to turn today in nothing but politics conversation. Let's chat about everyone's... No, I'm just joking. We're not touching any of that stuff tonight. Yeah, I'm with you guys. I can't wait for Wednesday to just get here already.
Whoever says that, I can't wait for Wednesday. Hump day.
It's hump day, Justin. It's the best day.
What was that commercial? Mike, hump day.
That's right. I forgot all about that.
The camel
commercial. Oh man, what a time. The hump day commercials. I wonder what that camel's doing today. But Justin, Emily alluded to it. We chatted all about Crown Jewel on Saturday, and everyone who hasn't seen our conversation about it, you can check it out now on YouTube or Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you consume your content. I know you had a chance to check it out, Justin. What did you think of the big show?
Yeah, obviously watched it Saturday before doing Busted Open on Sunday. And I think it was a decent show. I mean, it wasn't their best, but certainly I grade the PLEs in Saudi Arabia, you know, keeping in mind that I think that was their 12th PLE in Saudi Arabia since they started their deal to do the shows there a few times a year. And the shows now are much less of the creative inconvenience that they used to be. They used to be a major creative inconvenience where they were on the calendar, you know, these stadium level shows, and they just didn't make sense. Creative would just take a hard left turn and Shawn Michaels was coming out of retirement, or Goldberg's having a match with, like, it just didn't, you know. Now, at least I like the identity they've given to, like, Crown Jewel, to have, hey, the two top world champions in the men's and women's division are going to compete. And, I like just give identity, and everything else that happened on the show, most notably the way they kicked off with the Bloodline match, you know, obviously very pivotal and progressing to tonight on Raw, and we'll progress to Friday and SmackDown, and we'll progress to Survivor Series. So I thought it was a pretty good show. I know Saudi shows used to be kind of very expensive house shows. I like the fact that they are in line creatively.
You know, Justin, I've had a thing I've been doing recently where I'm comparing what's going on in WWE to things we used to give AEW a hard time about. And, you know, we talk about champion versus champions for a title that doesn't really count. We have the Rocks title and the FTW title, unannounced tag team tournament that didn't even announce the people in it. And now a ring as a prize for winning a matchup, a dynamite of a ring, you could say, being a championship in this situation.
11 diamonds or something.
Is Tony Khan, was it him all along, Justin? I think that's what I'm wondering here.
Justin, I tried to defer Jack away from this conversation because I know that it's just going to cause trouble.
Yes.
I like the idea of the rings. I think it's cool. Who wouldn't want a shiny ring? You saw Cody, you know, wearing it on the way to Dublin.
Yeah, I mean, the rings are fine. I mean, it is as that championship, that Crown Jewel belt is so
huge
and visually, like, wow. I mean, you know, they have it the glitz and glamour was reflected off the lights. I mean, so it would be kind of cool that if you could, it would be cool to have whoever wins it, who gets to walk around with that in their world title for as long as they're still world champion. I mean, obviously it's more belts. It makes you look more prestigious. I certainly get the marketing aspect. Okay, we're going to put it in a case and keep it here. This WWE experience. So it's like a residency title. But I would stay away from the AEW comparisons there.
Have you seen the difference, Justin, in those titles though? The Crown Jewel Championship is like four times the size.
Yeah.
It's almost comedically large.
Normal one. Like they could barely wear the normal one. The normal one looks really big on most champions. And then this one is just like ridiculously sized.
You absolutely, if they did take that back stateside, you absolutely would be giving that to the prop masters and telling them to transport it. You're not carrying that through TSA security.
No.
You're not going
the diamonds.
Yeah, no. You're not going to go do press with that. You're like, the hell with this.
It's just in your regular luggage next to your wrestling gear that's all sweaty and hasn't been cleaned yet. Throwing it in there. Let me ask you this then, Justin, because again, you haven't had a chance to see the show, or you did have a chance. You haven't had a chance to talk about the show here on Wrestling Inc. I know you chatted about it already on your other show on Busted Open, but did they get it right? I saw on Twitter all this talk about like who should have won, what matches and things like that. Do you just think overall they got the booking right?
I understand, having seen it now executed, I understand as you see the pyro and ballyhoo going off, Triple H raising Cody's hand with the beautiful blingy title, the Saudi, I guess, dignitaries of who those men and women were that were in the ring. I understand that like that's going to be the frame photo next to the All-American good guy, next to the top good guy in the company. That's going to be the frame photo that sits next to the probably bulletproof glass that Crown Jewel title sits in at the WWE Experience exhibit. I get that. So I get it why they did it. But from the X's and O's, for me, it's a missed opportunity. This was an opportunity to give Gunther, who like it or don't like it, his world title is the secondary world title. We know that. We know it's the one that was just created a few years ago. It was a chance to give Gunther a pinfall or submission victory over Cody Rhodes, something that Gunther could forever hold on to, and it would have not hurt Cody Rhodes one damn bit. So I get why they did it, and you can never go wrong if you're a company raising Cody Rhodes' hand. You can never go wrong. I fully acknowledge that. But I do think it was a missed opportunity to have Gunther beat Cody Rhodes in a situation where everybody could have walked away unscathed.
Yeah, I think it would have helped Gunther a lot. I do imagine, Emily, and we talked about this a little bit, but also I just wanted to get your thoughts on this. Now that I kind of know how everything plays out, I have a feeling those belts are just going to sit, as Justin said, with a photo above them at the WWE Experience, and may not even be on the line ever again. And this just might be a thing that they put up there once. And if that's the case, Cody's probably a better person to be there forever than Gunther in this case.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I mean, it's they've said that it's going to be defended each year, right? Champions versus champions. So again, it's one of those things with those exhibits, you can switch it out, right? You switch out the placard of like who's champion right now. So it's not a huge, a huge change, right? And I think they made a big deal about Cody having this international title is such a big deal and like that legacy. So I think he is kind of that perfect kind of first champion. Cause I don't know, even though Gunther is popular in some ways with international crowds, I don't know if he would hit the same way that Cody would as champion.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's a great, exactly. And I think it's to a point where it's like, as Saudi Arabia, you know, as best we know by all the different things they've been doing with having pro wrestling over there now, they've been doing a lot of stuff where it's like they're making some kind of progressive cultural shift, especially and they're using entertainment.
A lot of shifts.
And they're using entertainment as the primary vehicle. So I could see again there being the situation of okay, the Middle East crowd that's getting more progressively towards Western culture from an entertainment standpoint. Okay, who do we want standing tall in the picture for the first ever champion of this? Do we want the 6'4" Austrian? Or do we want the all-American superhero?
Right. Some sad news that came out of the weekend was a few people were released and not re-signed from WWE. Baron Corbin, it was reportedly not re-signed, and Indy Hartwell and Tegan Knox were released, Emily, from their contracts. Always sad news when you hear that someone has lost their job. I always hate these kind of news stories, but it happened. Any takeaways, thoughts on these?
I mean, I think I feel like Baron Corbin was definitely a surprise for me hearing it first coming out. A huge loss. I mean, 12 plus years in WWE. Just has had such an impact on the wrestling industry. Indy and Tegan, like, both are still somewhat new-ish, was just kind of like getting. I know Indy was really like getting into a good momentum. So that was an interesting one. And no matter what it is, like, in whenever you lose your job outside of wrestling, anything, it's just really hard to go through emotionally, mentally. So like, I'm sending lots of love. I've been through it a lot. So it's just, it's not fun. And whether it was, you know, again, we don't know how that all works, in this new era. But it's never fun to get that phone call.
Yeah, Justin, Baron Corbin is surprising to me. He seemed like someone who would have been a lifer in WWE just because he was so versatile in what you could do with him. But apparently that's not the case. Makes something I think about here, and again, wanting to be sensitive to, again, people lost their jobs. You never won. This is always terrible. But just how deep the roster is at WWE and that you can't keep everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you can't keep everybody, and I'll get back to that in a second. With Baron Corbin, yeah, I think that Baron Corbin was never, maybe not until now, as this news has come out, but even in general, I thought Baron Corbin was never fully appreciated or given a lot of credit, especially to the certain section of wrestling audience that can be very vocal and very negative. It, just because he was a football player who, because he didn't go the traditional independent wrestling route. But I think, you know, he did his job very well, and his job mostly was to be a heel, and he played an effective bad guy. Yeah, you disliked him. Don't give me this nonsense of it's go away heat or whatever. No, he's working you. He's doing his job. He did a very good job. He's very athletic. I love that spot where he'd slide out under the rope, go around the ring post and back in. I mean, that's, people don't realize how fast and agile you have to be to do that in real time in one take and not screw that up. So I'm also surprised by Baron Corbin too, on the sense of, you know, he was a football player who had a little time in the NFL before coming. So in this new era with the NIL, with acquiring some talents from other, you know, walks of life, that they wouldn't keep him around, if nothing else, even as an ambassador, even if they feel like his in-ring time is winding down, I would think they'd keep him involved. So that said, unfortunate. It's unfortunate for all of them, for Indy and for Tegan. I wish, it sounds like they're doing this with Corbin. It sounds like from the reporting, it doesn't sound like they're doing this with Tegan or Indy. I wish that they would, as a lot of things have improved in the company under the new regime, creatively and operationally. I do wish they would get more on the page of what Tony Khan and AEW has set a precedent of doing, which is, you can not re-sign people. You can't have everybody. There is only so many roster spots and so much TV time. But AEW, unless it's been like a serious disciplinary thing, AEW seems to have, you know, follow the policy of, even if we don't have anything for you in these final 4 months of your contract, we're going to honor the contract and pay you until the contract naturally runs out. It sounds like maybe this is what's happened with Baron Corbin, but traditionally WWE just cuts when they want to cut. It's the better business move. It's they're saving money on not paying somebody they're not using. But I do wish that, you know, when they're reporting record revenues that they are, you know, again, I know it's a business, but I would like to see them maybe move closer to, hey, we'll honor the duration of the contract the same way they would expect that wrestler to honor the duration before that wrestler could go talk to go anywhere else. So
unfortunately, a lot of even like corporate companies are at will, like, firing. Sure. So it can happen at any time for no reason whatsoever. And it's that day, that moment, 10 minutes, you're cut off, right? 10 minutes after you get the call, like, you're cut off from everything. So I hope it's not that brutal. But you know, depending on the organization, sometimes it is. But I do like this idea of having like a severance package, right? I guess you could call it that, where you honor the rest of your contract or you're given a package afterwards. I mean, that's always helpful when just in any job loss to have that little cushion, especially, like, I know Baron has family and stuff like that. So Yeah, it's tough, but I wish them all well, and you know, we'll have to keep track of what they're doing.
Where I'm very optimistic for all three of them is they had a very strong fan base around them. You know, there's a lot of people who really were ride or die for Tegan Knox and for Andy Hartwell. And also with Baron Corbin, especially now, people seem to really, as Justin said, appreciate him a lot more. He was someone that I didn't know how great he was until a pal of mine who used to review shows, Jim Alexander over at another company. He loved Baron Corbin, and he kept talking about how great he was. And then it started to really dominate, but you know, he is actually really talented. And especially when he got into the King of the Ring, I was like, this guy is really good. Not just the wrestling side, but yeah, being a bad guy, being someone you don't like, and then seeing him do the silly stuff, the serious stuff, the broke Corbin going to NXT. And I was, again, the biggest shock to me is I feel like you could put him anywhere and he's going to work. Having someone that versatile is so rare, where you can have him in a, if you wanted to give him a feud with Akira Tozawa, he'd make it great. And then you could next week put him in a feud with Roman Reigns and he'd find a way to make it work. Like that's so crazy, that versatility in pro wrestling. And he had it.
Yeah, no. And I agree with you, Jack, there that like he did have this versatility and like this creative energy that like he brought into every kind of persona that he brought out. And the fact that he came from football and that type of athleticism and that the creativity translated over is really hard to do, right? It takes a lot of training, a lot of focus, and not everyone catches on. And he did. He knew how to bring those characters to life and that side of him. And I, Justin, to your point, you mentioned kind of the NIL program, and I can kind of see him being a coach or helping kind of these young athletes who have never had any exposure to wrestling, him kind of giving advice and being a part of that behind the scenes process. If his in-ring career is not necessarily the journey that, you know, WWE wants him to go on right now. I could totally see that, but it's whether, you know, that's something that they're open to, or if he's open to, really. Yeah. But I could see him being a really good producer and agent of matches, and also like helping, you know, all these younger athletes, you know, come into the fold.
And I hope I'm right about this. I don't think he'll have any shortage of options of things to do, for the sense of, you know, whether he wants to go to another wrestling company or, you know, if you follow him on social, you know, he's obviously a huge Kansas City Chiefs fan. So whether he, you know, and he's got all his tattoos, so he's into artwork and tattoos. He loves to grill. He's always showing them. So, I mean, there might be different avenues of walks of life that he might find himself in. Hey, look, he can communicate on the microphone. You can't make it to the WWE at the level he has and sustain without having those skills. He was roommates once upon a time with Pat McAfee. So who knows? He might show up on the Pat McAfee show. Yeah. So I think hopefully for him, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'll just say hopefully he's got options. You know,
whatever. Yeah. And he's have you seen his Instagram videos of like him making like steak and all this delicious food? He could have a serious cooking show.
Yeah.
So his options are open.
Even if he's not the cook, he'd be a great host on one of those shows.
Or a judge.
Know, one of those guys. You know,
he'd be like a Simon Cowell of like cooking shows.
As far as him wrestling, because as wrestling fans, you know, I still want to see him in the ring, and obviously AEW would be great. TNA, we see in the chat, Baby Ice saying Corbin should try New Japan Pro Wrestling, all great things. I want him to make as much money as he can, but I feel like he would be such an intriguing draw on the indie level, like some of the guys like the Matt Cardona is doing. I feel like he would be someone who, especially because he's very big. Yeah, I always forget how big he is. And so he's someone who, if he was in like a GCW ring, would look like a monster. I think he'd be able to work that crowd up so well. And he's someone who I'd go, oh, that guy's wrestling there? I'm going to go buy a ticket and check out that show. Yeah. So I don't know. He's got a lot of options. And I think Hartwell and Nixon are both people who, whenever they're on, I see Twitter blow up for them. So I'm sure whatever they're going to do, they'll be successful as well. But as I always say, when someone gets released, now is when they need your support. So go buy their merch, go follow them, go do whatever they're follow whatever they're doing. That's when they need you the most. Someone who's also whose contract is about to be up and not renewed, Goldberg. My favorite person. Who's next? Goldberg's next. It was announced over the weekend that Goldberg will be having a retirement match in 2025. Emily May and I chatted about that a little bit on Saturday, but Justin, We're all speculating who it could be. Now, the obvious person, everyone says, Gunther might be the guy. Some people say maybe Braun Breaker because there's similarities there. What are your thoughts on Goldberg retiring and having a final match? And who do you think it should be?
Well, I mean, yeah, Gunther makes a lot of sense given the past interaction. I mean, I guess maybe it comes down to is whatever happens, is Gunther still world champion? Is that what you want? Do you want Goldberg challenging for that world title? That, again, that kind of feels very much like the creative inconvenience that used to be the Saudi Arabia shows that I was just talking about. So, you know, Braun Breaker is also an interesting choice. Obviously Goldberg's still in very good shape for his age. And, you know, if you can, and whether you like him or don't like him, or whether you thought that he's a good wrestler or not, whatever, you can't deny that he made a huge impact, you know, at his peak, at his prime, when he came into the business in 97 on TV. So I say all that to mean, like, if he can do it physically, which it looks like he could, and he doesn't need to have long matches, it is the right thing if you can give him a one last match, not only for him to say goodbye to the fans and advertise it and have his family be part of it, but hey, from the company standpoint, WWE, you can make a little money off that, right? Advertise it's the last time to see Goldberg in a match. So, yeah, and I think as long, and I'm sure they've already had this conversation with him, they being Triple H, Nick Khan, and company, as long as they've had the conversation and said, hey, look, we're going to give you a retirement match. Retirement match in pro wrestling means you're going to lose. So you're not going to come in and spear, jackhammer, 1, 2, 3, get the win. You're going to go out doing the job, looking at the lights. Hope you understand that. So as long as all parties are on the same page, and this could be fun. This doesn't have to be necessarily, I mean, this could be at a PLE, like a Royal Rumble or Elimination Chamber, where there's another gimmick match that's already in the main event spot with the Chambers and the Rumble match. So you could have it as like a semi-main, have it as its own attraction. This could be something that's first Raw Netflix. This could be something that's Saturday night's main event. I mean, what a draw to an NBC audience. So I think there's times that this could be, and I'm fine with it. You know, I'm good with it.
Yeah, we got some folks in the chat with some ideas. Stephen Camp, Cena versus Goldberg, I think would be fascinating. I know they have no history, but that's a marquee matchup. And Cena, while he's retiring, he's not necessarily retiring with one more matchup. So they could have a throwdown beforehand. But Danny Cochran with the right answer. Akira is ready! Akira versus Goldberg. Let's go, Emily May.
You owe it. Wait, you have to dance though. If you're gonna put Akira in the mix, you gotta dance. You gotta dance, Jack. Well, I know we mentioned Akira, we mentioned Cena. I mentioned, I think on Saturday, Bronson Reed would be kind of fun. I know Braun Breaker as well. I think any of these big brooding dudes that are just huge monsters going against Goldberg would be really just fantastic. I think, Drew would be great too. All great ideas.
Yeah, Jose Tepede says Goldberg versus Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania would be good. Sonny Sitar says Rey Mysterio versus Goldberg.
It needs to be somebody. It needs to be not a Rey, not a Cena, maybe not even a Drew, but it needs to be somebody who like could add that to the resume and boost them. Yeah. You could argue that maybe Gunther doesn't need that. He's already the longest running IC champion. He's already a current world champion. So you could argue, but I think that it only boosts Gunther even more. Obviously, it would certainly be a huge push on Braun Breaker. Mm-hmm. I'm calling on Bronson Reed. Like, it needs to be somebody who that's going to help make them, or if they're already made, it'll seal the deal that they're a future Hall of Famer.
Scott Langford saying KO, payback for taking the Universal title. Tox Kazim says it's got to be Braun Breaker. You know, this is my, I feel like Braun Breaker is the right answer, but this is my outside of the box real answer is, you know, Randy Orton, he's known as the legend killer, but hasn't killed a legend in a while. I think if we're going to start pushing him up to that world title again, I think him killing the legend of Goldberg would be a fun way to do that. Maybe have him beat Goldberg before going into a John Cena final match, and we'll see if he can kill another legend.
Kill another legend? Oh, goodness.
Ooh. Wouldn't that,
that comic book we need to write?
To the person in the chat that said KO, wouldn't that be something on the resume? Kevin Owens can say he was the last opponent for Stone Cold Steve Austin and for Goldberg.
That would be That would be, you know, that'd be right up there with Jericho saying he beat Stone Cold and The Rock in one night.
Yeah.
I think that's when KO could say in their in his rivalry right now, go, who's the real legend killer, Randy Orton? We got some backstage news on Raw's move to Netflix. According to Fightful Select, Netflix has mentioned SmackDown stars Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes alongside Raw superstars like CM Punk as wrestlers they hope will be featured on the show. They also added added people like Motor City Machine Guns, LWO, EO Sky, and other members of the roster, which were on hand for a commercial shoot. Emily, do you think this is Netflix just not knowing about the roster split, or is this just them saying, look, we're promoting a show, name the biggest folks who could possibly ever be there?
I think this is, remember when NXT moved over to CW, the first few weeks were, you know, had huge stars. CM Punk was showing up, but there was no like division of the brand, right? So the first few weeks or even that big debut and that big premiere, it's going to have all of the big stars that mainstream general non-wrestling fans are going to know. So I honestly think, obviously, Netflix is very smart. They would not have made this deal. They understand the intricacies of all of these brands and which stars go to which show. I think for this one, it's going to be one of the biggest changes in wrestling media and distribution in the history of our industry. So they're just trying to pull out all the stops. So they're going to bring Roman Reigns. They're going to bring CM Punk, Cody Rhodes, like all those people that are going to have that crossover appeal.
Yeah, you know, Justin, I also feel like, I mean, we saw a bunch of SmackDown stars today on Raw, so I don't know if this is necessarily them not understanding the brand split, just they could show up on Raw. That's fair for them to say.
Yeah, this will be something kind of interesting to watch how this plays out, because, you know, when SmackDown moved to Fox, and that was a record-setting deal for the money that was, which, God, that's, what, 5 years ago now, and that seems like an eternity. When SmackDown went to Fox, they wanted Roman Reigns on SmackDown. They wanted Ronda Rousey on SmackDown. They had the same kind of requests. And it's an interesting, and the SmackDown and WWE relationship, or the Fox-WWE relationship, it never really, I mean, WWE got their money. The checks cleared, obviously. But it never panned out the way, especially on the Fox end of things. I don't think Fox, you know, it wasn't what they envisioned. So Netflix is kind of the same situation. Netflix is given a whole lot of money. They have ink on paper. They're going to give a whole lot of money to WWE over these next years. And, you know, when you do that, you're like, all right, I want the best. I want Cody Rhodes. I want Punk. I want all these big names I see trending that are, you know, Netflix values retention. They value minutes watched. So they want the names that are going to invoke retention. And so, yeah, you can really front load the first Raw on Netflix, and you can front load when it gets around Mania and, you know, the different seasons, but we all know that there is a roster split, and that especially if Raw ends up decreasing its overall time each week, if it's not a hard 3 hours every week, you know, there's only so many spots to go. So it's going to be interesting just to watch how the relationship is. And when I say all this to mean, hopefully the Netflix relationship with WWE goes better than what Fox. Hopefully 5 years from now, Netflix is not looking back going, oh man, this was, we got burned on this. This isn't what we thought. I don't think it will be, because the Netflix deal has so much more. You know, the WWE Network internationally is going to be on Netflix. You know, it's still here on Peacock, obviously, domestically. You know, so I have higher hopes for it. And I think, you know, it'll be handled better. But I mean, it's definitely a real thing to watch when you have Netflix is the one distributor for Raw, but, you know, USA and traditional cable still that for SmackDown. And then, oh, by the way, the PLEs that you're promoting are on competitive streaming service to Netflix on of Peacock. So there's a lot of hands to grease here.
Yeah, I mean, I think eventually if the Netflix deal goes well enough, eventually everything might move to the same like streaming platform once those media rights and all those other deals yeah, lapse. I think that's eventually what's going to happen. That's my gut, if it all goes well, just because the reach of Netflix and just the influence of Netflix is just so much stronger.
But
Well, cable's dying in general. I mean, everything's going to be streaming soon.
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree with both of you, and that's I absolutely agree. It's a great, great call. What I will ask you in return, though, so let's say that's how that thing's playing out. I don't know how much long, how many more years the deal with Peacock is. I think it's at least through 25. So let's say that happens, though. Let's say that the WWE Network domestically migrates from Peacock over to Netflix here in the States. Okay, so now you just, you know, that's a big loss to Peacock, which Peacock is obviously NBC Universal. NBC Universal is USA. How does that make USA feel, who's still in the game of SmackDown, but now they've lost everything else?
I mean, it's business, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's yeah. business. So, unfortunately, like, they have to either sweeten the deal and, like, add some extra perks to that deal. Obviously, like, I'm not in those conversations. I don't know exactly who's going to. But it's a lot to think about. There's, you know, it's a highly competitive market.
If I'm WWE, I'm looking at USA as like, thanks for the good times, but again, cable, sorry, you're not the future. I would not, like, it may ruffle some feathers, but I'm also not worried about 2030 rolling around and being like, oh man, what's USA Network thinking about us?
I mean, every network has an app that streams, right? Yeah. Like, every network has like a subsequent app. So that's where it's been moving, and you know, that's the future.
We all know a great worker when we see one, and that's what the guys at 5-9 Whiskey are. Like a performer who leaves it all in the ring, the crew at Troll Co. have made a bourbon that's all about grit and sweat. You see, two old field guys figured, why not turn our daily grind into something you can sip on? And who wouldn't want a splash of hard work in their whiskey? 5-9 is made with 100% Kentucky corn, bringing you those crisp, fresh flavors with a smooth finish. They even took the trip to Owensboro, home of the 10th oldest distillery in Kentucky. They put in the work. The name 5-9 is a nod to those who clock in from 5 a.m. to 9 p.m., not the 9 to 5 life. These are the real champions who put in the sweat, tears, and more. Real life road warriors. They work hard, and now they're pouring that same energy into the whiskey. So why not grab a bottle? Help these guys out. They're literally drinking their profits. Cheers. Head to 59whiskey.com. That's F-I-V-E-N-I-N-E whiskey.com. And use promo code WRESTLING20, that's 20, for 20% off your first order. Tools down, bottoms up.
Lowe's knows you want to get even more value for the holiday. That's why as a MyLowe's Rewards member, you get new member deals on holiday decor, tools, and more. And you earn points when you shop. More points equal more rewards to help you save on holiday and more. Not a member? Join for free today at Lowe's.com/MyLowe's Rewards because Lowe's knows deals. Program subject to terms and conditions. Points are awarded on eligible purchases. See Lowe's.com/terms for full details. Subject to change.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Well, speaking of the future, we got to talk about the show that happened today. But before I do want to say I saw a few comments in the chat about Gunther being teased for Goldberg. We know. Like, it'll probably be Gunther. That seems to be the way they're leaning. We're just trying to have a little bit more fun with predicting who could Goldberg face with that. If we just said, oh, yeah, it's Gunther, that's not really a good conversation. You got to have some fun with it. But everyone who's watching, I want to say thank you so much for joining us. We got J.R. Smith, Danny Cochran, Laura Rock, Ethan Cruz, Tommy. Oh, haven't seen you in a while, Tommy. Stalking you. We got Johnny Wrestling. We got Baby Ice. We got Tuck Graff. Killer of Demons, Tox Kazim, and Kid Cudi. Thank you for rolling through, Kid Cudi. I saw, had some great comments in the chat in the comment section of YouTube. Sent some of the questions from those YouTube comments to Emily on Saturday. So if you comment in the YouTube comments, I take a look, and sometimes it becomes conversation pieces for the show. So make sure to comment, like, share, subscribe, 5-star review. All that good stuff. Let's talk about tonight. Woo. Let's talk about the main event. Let's talk about Seth Rollins versus Sheamus versus Damian Priest versus Dominic Mysterio. A fun match that boils down to Bronson Reed showing up and beating up everyone. And like Oprah Winfrey, he says, you get a tsunami, you get a tsunami, you get a tsunami. Dominic almost takes advantage, but Damian Priest catches him, slams him, and pins him to make Priest the number one contender. Emily, earlier in the night, Gunther and Kaiser had a conversation with Kaiser wanting to put down Cody Rhodes, but Gunther stops him and gives Cody his due before saying both he and Kaiser need to do better. So a lot of stuff happening in the world title picture here. Damian Priest, number one contender, and a champion, Gunther, who's looking to do better.
Yeah, I mean, this is a this was a really fun main event. I feel like everyone got in some great moments. Gunther looks ready, though. The fact that Gunther is taking charge of his championship reign and he's telling Kaiser, like, calm down, buddy. Like, I got this. Like, we're going to figure this out. I feel like he's kind of in this stoic, very like focused moment of his championship. I mean, now we have a new number one contender. But again, we saw the impact, Jack, that Bronson Reed has had. We saw him just kill it over the weekend. And then now he just disturbed this whole number one contender match. Made a huge impact on everyone. Dom looked like he was so scared. He was about to run away and he was like, I don't want to mess. Again, Dom trying to cheat and find his way in. Luckily he didn't win, but Bronson Reed, have to give him all of his flowers. He should get this number one contender spot. But he is building this feud between him and Seth Rollins in such a really great way. And I know we're going to get this matchup again. I know, Jack, we talked about it, but this was like, I loved how this was the fallout of Crown Jewel. And it really just solidified that Seth gave him his praise, you know, from over the weekend, but this was an awesome reveal that this match had to break down that way.
Yeah. Justin, this one, first off, they were showing Dominic Mysterio hiding while these tsunamis were happening. At first, I was like, don't show us. You're supposed to surprise us when he gets the win. But the way he was hiding, I was like, oh, I know what you guys are doing. He does look like a sneaky little jerk.
Yes, he does.
He was like peeking over the top looking. Was so, so good.
He's a lurker. He's and a lurker.
So you hear that, lurkers? You're just like Dominic Mysterio. And But Justin, this camera was just, those subtle camera work things are so great. And also, I want you to talk a little bit about Bronson Reed as well, because you were a day one Bronson Reed guy who never lost faith in him. I loved him coming in here. I actually love that guys got their hits in on him and then he kind of shrugged him off. Justin, I want you to brag a bit about being a day one Bronson Reed guy and a day one Damian Priest guy. Both guys, good night tonight. Just thoughts on the match and everything else.
Well, yeah, I mean, I saw Bronson Reed early on. I was like, that's this guy's talent. Damian Priest, you go watch him. Hell, I've been chokeslammed by Damian Priest. that'll make you a supporter.
Did you have an interview go wrong, Justin? Like, what?
No, I was managing Wardlow on Wardlow's 2-year run as world champion. And Punishment Martinez, as we now know as Damian Priest, came through and I might have low blowed the guy and he might have eventually caught up with me and, you know, things happened. So I became a very, very, very big supporter after that.
Are you forced to be a supporter? Is that really?
I was going
to
say, if you chokeslam me, I will not be a supporter.
Nah, that's not. I don't know. There's something about it. You're like, I'd rather have the guy on my side. all kidding aside, I love the cutaways to Dom because it was great. Because too, if you notice, so Bronson goes to the one corner and Tsunami's Priest, and then he goes to the next corner to do Sheamus. And when he goes to that corner, that's where Dom was, and Dom like saw him coming and scurries away. It was really fun. I was like, oh my God, Dom's going to win this. He's going to be the only man standing. So this was fun. I got to give a lot of credit to Seth Rollins, both tonight and back on Saturday. Obviously he beats Bronson on the record book, but Seth did a lot to sell for Bronson, not just physically and selling, at one point Seth tries to body slam Bronson Reed, and Bronson falls on him. And then Seth is flopping like a fish, like as if he's trapped under the weight of the world. Yeah. So great sell there. But then he sold the facial expressions. You know, the match was over, but Bronson stood up in the ring and is looking out at Seth, who's on the outside of the ring. And Seth's just looking at him like, who are you? What are you? What are you doing? As Bronson's got blood streaming down his face from legit being hard way to open up from the steel steps. So Seth did a lot, has done a lot to really elevate Bronson, even if Bronson didn't get the dub. So they're going to continue on. That's fine. And then with Gunther, yeah, I mean, like, it was interesting at Crown Jewel that he shook hands with Cody. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's interesting. And then tonight, the promo where he gives respect to, he goes, these are three worthy competitors and Dom. You know, he gives a baby face kind of promo. And so I'm like, this is an interesting little situation here. Like, have we run into the situation where Gunther can just slightly tweak his character where he is willing to just to give a little respect? He still can be dominant in the ring and still work the same style, but is he just tweaking his character just enough to where we've ran out of quality baby faces to challenge him? So now let's line up some heels that challenge him and allow the people to feel okay to cheer him. I kind of feel that's the situation we're moving in, which is interesting timing given Priest becoming number one contender again. It's interesting timing if Gunther's going to have a 2025 match against Goldberg, it's a retirement match. Like, these are all interesting little situations and dynamics of if we are, in fact, turning Gunther.
Well, yeah, that was one of the things that I was going to ask you about, and Emily, I'll pass it to you, because going into this, it did feel like Gunther was making a turn today, which made me doubly think Dominic was going to win, because that would match up better as opposed to, as Justin's saying, Damian versus Gunther. Going to be hard to cheer against Damian, but at the same time, I feel like a lot of people are cheering for Gunther anyways. You know, you hear the crowds, people like Gunther. I mean, they know we respectfully boo him, if that makes sense, because we're supposed to, but we all love him. And so it does kind of feel like, man, all you got to do is put him across the ring from a killer like Drew McIntyre, and the crowd is going to be bananas for him.
Yeah. I mean, Jeff, that was kind of what I was going to say, is that Gunther has shined and grown so much the last few months on the mic. He is so likable. Even though when he's doing a heel promo, you laugh, you kind of like get behind him in a friendly way. And that's why I think this promo tonight was like a shift. Justin alluded to it, that there's like the slight shift. It's not like, it's not going to happen overnight, but there's little slight things that Gunther did tonight that makes me think he is shifting more into a likable character. And it's going to make sense later down the line that he's like, you know, he's not as hard on Cody, but then he's going to go after all of those heels. So like he kind of showed that and alluded to that tonight through his words and his actions. But Dom was hilarious tonight, just trying to hide away. And all of the Judgment Day, you know, all of them do that. They hide, they run away. So it fits into what he's like.
Final question for this segment here, Justin. Does Dom need to start getting wins for us to take him seriously? Like, is he at the point where he now starts to, we hate him, is it time for him to start getting wins to really dig the knife in further?
It depends on what the goal is for where you want him 6 months from now. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to get heat on him having like the Intercontinental title, then yeah, he's got to get a few wins just to even get into that title picture. If he gets so much heat now where we're just still dangling the carrot of like, again, every time he crosses paths with like a Liv Morgan, Rhea Ripley, that he's just going to get, you know, slapped or something. Like, it depends on what you want. I mean, he gets so much heat, you know, you don't really need to mess with much right now. But if you want, like, if you really want to try to, you know, move him in a different position of like, I mean, oh my God, like, let's actually have him threaten the crowd with the fact that he could be a champion. Like, they just, you know, then yeah, you might want to try to find a way for him to start to, you know, lie, cheat, and steal his way to some victories. It just depends. But I mean, he just has the heat that every wrestler, every heel wrestler dreams of, the where they can't wait to drown you out as you try to open your mouth. if I'm the booker and I have that at my disposal in one of my shows, I would be very hesitant to make any drastic changes because that's you aim for that. That's everybody wishes that. So I don't know. I don't think you need to necessarily have him racking up a bunch of wins right now. He's still just great being just the dirty, sleazy Dom, you know?
Well, he was out there earlier in the night as well. We're welcomed to Monday Night Morgan. Liv Morgan is chatting when she's interrupted by the tag team champions. They go back and forth, and Liv Morgan alludes to the champs splitting up without the titles. This eventually leads to Adam Pearce coming out and announcing a battle royal with the winner getting a shot at Liv Morgan's championship. Final four of the battle royal is Lyra Valkyria, Io Sky, Bianca Belair, and Jade Cargill. The tag team champs almost have to face off, but are both dumped over the top when Liv and Raquel get involved. Eventually, Io Sky hits a German on the ring apron to secure the win. Emily May, we have a new number one contender, Io Sky, the tag team champions. More tease turmoil. A lot of stuff going on in this opening segment.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about this since Bianca and Jade won the titles again for the second time. All of us, all the fans, everyone have been speculating, when are they going to turn? When are we going to see the turmoil and the backstabbing? And I feel like tonight was the first time that they officially kind of set the seeds that something is going to happen. I mean, the fact that Liv said it out loud, like, this is the beginning, right? So everyone, strap in, because it's going to be a wild ride. Yeah. I mean, we saw that tableau of them like looking at each other, staring each other down, and it's just the beginning. We'll see kind of how it unfolds, but you know, Jack and I talked about how they don't have like a single entrance. Like, they're cohesive in the ring, but like, it's not cohesive outside. So this is going to be, it's interesting that Liv, you know, of course, Liv and Raquel are going to come in, get involved. Like, that's 100%. That's their MO. That's what they're going to do. But I'm excited for Io Sky to get this opportunity. I think we'll see again how that unravels. But we have to remember that Liv has not won a clean match. She has Raquel, the brooding force behind her as well. The rest of the Judgment Day members, like, it's not going to be good for Io Sky, unfortunately, because Liv never wins clean. She's, so again, what those stipulations of the match are, I'm sure we'll learn more from the general manager, but unless we put someone in a cage again, it still might get messy.
Yeah. You know, Justin, Raquel's always on the outside. We've got turmoil between the tag team champions constantly being teased here. But the thing I want to talk to you about is a fatal four-way to determine a number one contender and a battle royal to determine a number one contender. Are we sure Tony Khan isn't booking this?
Oh my God, Jack, stop.
Hey, I look at it as a way it gets more of the women some TV time out there.
It's exactly. They made
the flight to Riyadh. Let them give them some TV time.
It's a win because we get to see more women in wrestling matches.
No, but it's in all seriousness, though, Justin. I love you've heard me enough to know that I get a battle royal, I'm excited. I get a fatal four way, I'm excited. I actually loved all this stuff, but my question to you is really something that caught me off guard, but it really sunk in today. Is we get the start of the show, Liv Morgan comes out to her music as she's flanked by Dominic Mysterio and Raquel Rodriguez. Has she become the star of the Judgment Day? Like, it feels like Judgment Day has really, in a lot of ways, become the Liv Morgan revenge tour, I guess.
I mean, you know, you look at Judgment Day, so you look at her, Dom, Raquel, Finn, Carlito, JD. Dom's the most interesting of the male talent. He's right there handcuffed to Liv. So yeah, I mean they're it. Finn is kind of taking a secondary back seat. He's got this, he's still stewing over Damian Priest, but that's just that. And JD just kind of is an extension of Finn. Carlito's just kind of like this comedic, you know, frontline foil. He's the first guy they're gonna send to get his ass kicked. Mm-hmm. You know,
and one of those though.
And
JD is thrilled that someone else is that guy.
Now. Yeah, and then Raquel is Liv's bodyguard, so Raquel is Liv's extension until she isn't. So yeah, I mean, Liv Morgan has managed to take over and be the focal point of Judgment Day.
Yeah, and I do have to say, like, Liv, like, going back a little bit from this weekend and Crown Jewel, like, she got very emotional at the post show. Because she's had such a journey in this last year of trying to find her place in WWE and earn championships where she has a good run. She has a good storyline. People are behind her. And this is one of the most intense storylines she's been in that is over with fans. So I think it's a testament to the work she's doing, the work that Dom's doing, like the whole Judgment Day group. And so I appreciated that, like, she was honest at the post show and really showed, like, that she's worked really hard for it to win, you know, the Women's Crown Jewel Championship. But now she has two. And it shows the power of the amount of work that she put in. And you can, you know, hate her when she's in the ring and, like, when she's, like, backstabbing everyone, but she's worked hard for it.
Yeah. Liv, you know, she's been a wrestling fan most of her life. I did an interview with her a year and a half, 2 years ago. It was when she was still a face, and she had already won. I don't know if she did at the time or soon thereafter, but she's already won. She'd already won a world title once as a babyface. And the only identity to her was kind of like, she's Liv Morgan, super fan, wanted to be in WWE, and she won. That's fine. It's feel good, and most fans can relate to that. But you only, once they win the title once, then it's gone. Okay, mm-hmm. It's like, well, what else you got? Now that they've reached the mountaintop, what else do you got? It's all shucks, great, but what else? So Liv Morgan was desperately in need for an identity. She was in need for something, and you're not going to alter her backstory. You're not going to all of a sudden, you know, claim that she's doing the dark arts and that she's with the Wyatt Six. No, you've already established that she's a lifelong fan. So what do you do then to pivot? And so the fact that they moved her in to let her be the home wrecker, that Dirty Dom was doing mommy dirty and with Liv, and Liv infiltrated her way into Judgment Day, this has given her an identity. Then this revenge tour, and it sucked that Rhea legit got hurt in the spring. But that added a little bit of juice to it, that Liv came in and actually legit injured Rhea and sidelined her for a few months. So I'm so glad that she has an identity now. She has a lot now to sink her teeth in and work with and build off of. And, you know, she can be a main event player in the women's division for many more months and years. She can be a repeat world title winner because they have so much to build off of, rather than it just being, oh, she's a fan that's happy to be here and she finally won, you know?
Yeah, she's definitely another example of someone who never judged someone based off of, how do I say this? Like, because she wasn't embraced by a lot of people right away. And it took a while for her to find this groove. And I think if a lot of people just made the snap judgment that we sometimes make online of, like, this person's got it, this person's doesn't, you may have lost this great opportunity and this great talent. But now that she's had the chance to show what she can do, she's clearly a star. She's super popular. Don't snap judgment on people is what I'm saying. Let them have a chance. Because there's a lot of people, especially right now in WWE, that are huge stars that we weren't super into at certain times. Roman Reigns being one of them.
Seth Rollins, like, everyone has had that transition, that journey. It doesn't happen overnight. It could take 5-10 years. So, it's actually, like, when you really look at her journey, it's amazing to see.
Well, speaking of Roman Reigns, we had Sami Zayn and the Usos in the ring. Jimmy Uso accuses Sami Zayn of kicking Roman Reigns on purpose. Sami Zayn tells Jimmy that he's the one that can't be trusted. And Sami says it felt good to get all in the ring together, but he's over it. He's done. Jey Uso says not only is Sami family, he's Sami Uso. Justin, this is a story that has obviously been probably the biggest cash cow for WWE in the past, for however long you want to go back. Looks like they're going back to it. How do you feel?
As they should, because it's a story that everybody hangs on to. And, you know, just to kind of go back to how we just transitioned into this topic, because we were just talking about how there's been a lot of talents who, you know, you got to give it some time. They don't always necessarily click right away. I'll be the big man, and I'll admit this and just remind and tell myself. I don't know if it was 10 years ago or 9 years ago or 8 years ago. I can't remember when Sami Zayn got himself to the main roster, but whatever it was at that time when it was, I was not a fan. I knew of El Generico. I knew what he accomplished. I knew the fan base he had, you know, in ROH and prior to his time in WWE. But I looked at him as Sami Zayn coming out, you know, dressed the way he was, the checkered hat and everything. I was like, this guy is generic. This guy, I didn't know what was going to keep him around. I did not find him interesting. And I was on the record saying and writing such. And I fully, at this point now, fast forward again, 8, 10 years ago, whatever it is, I fully, absolutely regret it and admit that I was wrong. Mm-hmm. It was just that he was probably just not even given the opportunity or given anything. So I completely admit that, hey, Sami Zayn, if you ever see this, hey, if you saw or read anything, I was wrong. Sorry. Because he has shown when he's been given the situation to be in the dynamics of his bloodline that he can play serious, dramatic. He can play on your ass, funny. He can get physical when he needs to. I mean, he can do it all. And so I was completely wrong on Sami Zayn. I'll be on the record to say that I was completely wrong about him 8, 10 years ago in WWE. And so he's absolutely the right choice to bring back into the fold here. I saw other people on social, you know, speculating, is there more family members, legit blood family members that WWE needs to sign or bring in? Not in this situation. For the babyface fourth man, so to speak, Sammy's the guy that makes sense because the fans do look at him as a honorary member. The Saudi Arabia crowd tonight was chanting Sami Uso. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. They have not forgot the magic and the dynamic that was him befriending one of the Uso brothers and trying to just to get accepted to be part of the group. And that was when they were heels. And now that they're babyfaces, it's a whole other spin to it. So this is a great storytelling.
Well, it's very much the band getting back together, good feeling. Yeah. And I got to say, I was neutral on Sami Zayn, honestly, up until weirdly enough, the match with the Jackass guys. And I was like, wow, he made this super entertaining. He is a star. But Emily, I want your thoughts on all this. And the question for you is, Sami Uso, sure, but why not Sami Reigns?
Oh my goodness, Jack, you're causing trouble. You're just stirring the pot, Jack. So Sami Zayn, like his promo tonight, like it had the up and down, the roller coaster. It had that emotion behind it, and you weren't sure which direction he was gonna go. You didn't know if he was gonna claw his way back and beg to be a part of this again. We've seen him like super emotional about trying to get back in. We've seen him denied. So I liked this emotional build of Jimmy and Jay and Sammy really trying to get everyone back into the fold. I still have trust issues though with Jimmy. I'm not sure. I'm not really on board yet. So we'll kind of have to see. But I don't know. Did you? It has to be Sami Uso.
You already got two Usos. Have two Reigns. I feel like that's just fair.
No, I feel like it has to be. It has to be the Usos.
No, especially because Jack, you're also missing like the underlying. Like they're called Uso because in the Samoan language, us is means brother.
Brother.
Right, but you know, they also reign over the WWE.
No, you're stretching.
The reign.
Jack, you're done. You're cut off.
You're stretching.
But it's good. It's good to stretch. It's healthy.
Yeah, I know. But I liked how it had that emotional pull. Like it had like when they said like Sami Uso, like you could tell that it was such, he's been waiting for that. He's been waiting for that for so long. The crowd, like Justin said, behind him 100% shouting Sami Uso, like it can't get better than that moment. But I think it's going to cause some more internal, discussions.
Well, some people who are having internal discussions are the Wyatt Six, and they're having them with The Miz, who's been kidnapped. Bo Dallas says that he never wanted the Final Testament, only wanted Miz. They also showed a little clip of Miz talking to a young Bo Dallas, playing on the history, Emily May. What is going on with the Wyatt Six?
Well, this isn't very good, Jack. Remember I said the Miz has to be careful? We talked about that.
That ship sailed.
Yeah, I'm very worried for the Miz. I think we need to watch his social media, because I have the feeling Wyatt Six might take over his social media, because if he's kidnapped, he has no access. I think they took everything. I think they're going to take over. That's so scary that he had tape on his mouth. Like, I'm frightened for him. So this is not good. But I need, and eventually we'll probably find out, but I want to know why they wanted the Miz specifically. I don't think that is quite clear why they just wanted him.
Well, it does. There was the history of Bo Dallas and the Miz in the past, Justin. Yes. What did you think, Justin, of this? This was one of my favorite videos they've done, because this actually did feel very much like a horror movie. Mm-hmm. So I want your thoughts on this, Justin, but also one of my little favorite parts was afterwards Michael Cole actually selling that this was a serious situation, and not just being like, crazy things happening around here today. Thoughts on all that?
I agree. It was one of the best, produced and edited videos of the Wyatt Six, that we've gotten. Watching it, what it made me think was of, if you guys ever saw the movie, the second in the Christopher Nolan trilogy of the Batman movies, the Dark Knight, with Heath Ledger as the Joker, when he first holds the one guy hostage. Mm-hmm. And he makes a videotape of it. It's like, you know, and he's putting Gotham on notice, and it had that kind of a feel to it. I'm not saying it was as cinematic or as great of a production, but that's just what it kind of gave me vibes of. They showed a clip of Miz back when he was like coaching or managing, whatever the situation was, when Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel were, I guess, what, they were the B-team? So, I mean, there's obviously some history, which is fun. I always like when they acknowledge history and they don't pretend that things
they don't
didn't
just
happen.
Ignore it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's fun. And I'm interested. I think that we'll probably hear more of like the Bo Dallas psychology of why he's so screwed up about whatever happened at that time. You know, I like that. I think the thing that, you know, obviously, as I've said before, the fans don't really want to boo anything with the Wyatt Six, because it's still a tribute to the man of Bray Wyatt and his legacy. So they don't really want to boo that. But even if the Miz is the guy who's just the heel that everybody loves to brag on, you have to watch how far you take it to where you get to a point of like, okay, am I supposed to be cheering the, you know, I don't know. I'll be interested to watch how this does. I think also too, I think it's important to remember the Wyatt Six don't necessarily, and they haven't been, but, and that, let's keep this. The Wyatt Six don't have to be on Raw in living color in the arena every week. And I think it's important too that their storylines don't have to be. So if a lot of the story is cinematic, if you tell me the Wyatt Six are going to live in WWE with all of their segments being obviously pre-taped segments, like what we saw here, and that the payoff is going to be largely cinematic pre-tape stuff with the occasional appearances in front of a live crowd, which when they do have appearances, up until just recently when they had the last live appearance, the fans chant "this is awesome" or "holy you know what," like they still catch people's attention with their looks and the lights and the whatever. But if you told me they were largely going to live in the pre-tape and cinematic world, I'd be okay with that, because I think the more times that they're under real lights and in the ring and in live and living color, I think some mystique gets chipped away each time. Mm-hmm. So I'm fine if the preservation of this act or acts of these characters, if they live in that world, I'm okay with that, because I think that might be better served than trying to trot them out in front of a live crowd every week.
And I'd actually be okay too if they sort of disappeared and only came back for the biggest shows, and if they weren't on like the B shows, and they kind of were, I don't want to say like a part-timers, but like they don't have matches on Raw. They only have matches at WrestleMania and Royal Rumble and things like that.
And we've seen, when they wrap things up with Chad Gable and company, there was a gap of so many weeks where we didn't see or hear anything of them. Mm-hmm. And I know WWE is reducing their live events, their house shows. They're not, they're scaling back on that. But if part of the attraction is, okay, we're going to put them on some non-televised house shows to let the people pay to see them in person, let them see the spooky entrance and hear the music, but it's not on TV, so it's not, like, I'd be fine with that too. If that's how you want to get use out of them versus sending them home for 6 weeks to sit at home, hey, come do the Friday, Saturday, Sunday loop and do the house shows, that could help drive some tickets for us. Like, I'm fine with that too.
Absolutely. And we have New Day versus the War Raiders, a grudge match. Woods costs the New Day and then tags himself. When he tags himself in, the number one contenders raid on. We also had Chad Gable versus Dragon Lee. It's a great one that comes down to Gable trying to use the ropes, Vega and Nile getting involved, and Rey Mysterio coming out, kicking Gable, and Dragon Lee getting the win. These are the two final things that happened. Emily May. Chad Gable, Dragon Lee, a great matchup. War Raiders, number one contenders already. They continue to go on. Any thoughts or takeaways from these matchups?
Yeah, I mean, I think War Raiders are going to continue to dominate because, again, they've been rebranded. They're, you know, they're fighting back to that top spot. So we're going to continue to see them dominate the tag team division. I mean, Dragon Lee versus Chad Gable, incredible match. Dragon Lee just impresses me every time. Really just so incredible. And I feel like this was an amazing match and a really big win for Dragon Lee.
Yeah, Dragon Lee took that back body drop to the outside at one point, and that looked like it hurt so bad.
He went really high up, and then just
really far down.
And it just, whoo, like it's things like that that, the fact that they're doing big spots like that on Raw, you know, Dragon Lee's the person to do that every week.
Justin, Scott Langford in the chat says they are pushing the New Day split way too hard. Do you agree, Justin?
Well, I mean, they've been slow burning it. They've been teasing issues since back in the summer or maybe before. And to that point, thank you, Scott, for the transition, for the segue, as we call it here in the professional broadcasting business. As I have it in my notes here, is Survivor Series this month. Mm-hmm. That will mark the 10-year anniversary of New Day. Mm-hmm. So what a date to circle if we're finally going to have the implosion of New Day. So I think we were in like first and second gear, slow playing it all through the months. They had the, help me out here. They teased for a minute. They kind of had like the new member, and then that guy got like cut real quickly. Mm-hmm. Who am I thinking of? Anyways, he was
Odyssey Jones.
Odyssey Jones. There. I kept wanting to say Obi Femme, which is wrong. Like, Obi Femme is still fine. Right. He's down in NXT kicking ass. Odyssey Jones. They kind of teased that Odyssey Jones was like the new shiny, you know, you can sit with us at this table. And then he got boosted. You know, so they had like reset things. Mm-hmm.
Thought there was going to be like a rebranding from there. Like new. Yeah. New Day members.
Right. So we're back on it. So now we're kicking up from second gear. We're hitting like, I can tell that they have an end game in sight. Like a match between Woods and Kingston's probably brewing for a Survivor Series here. And maybe Big E's gonna have to be like the special referee or something like that. You know, we're getting there.
Yeah, no, it's definitely building, and you could see it's getting more intense, and there's more mistakes happening. I'm gonna say mistakes in quotes. Between them, like they're not working as a tag team as much. It's definitely building to something bigger.
Emily, if you had the pen, as they say, do you break up the New Day or do you keep them together for the long haul? Comes down to you, by the way.
It all comes down to me. Oh no, everyone's gonna hate me, Jack. I'm the worst general manager.
Not if you pick the right answer. If you pick the wrong one, though,
I would say it's time to break up the New Day. I would say it's long enough. I know, Jack, you can hate me. Even though I love what they've done for WWE, they've been such an amazing team, but I think it's time. I think it's time.
Justin, do you agree? New Day rocks or New Day sucks? What say you?
I'm not even taking the bait to that. There's nothing more they can accomplish as a team. So you might as well try to get something out of splitting them and turning one of them heel. Well, it looks like it's going to be Woods. Mm-hmm. I'm not Googling this. I think Woods is the youngest of New Day. So you know, you might as well try something. You've built up this 10 years of equity. That's an eternity in the modern era of pro wrestling and WWE, where they have, you know, 5 hours of TV a week. So you might as well try to get something out of this and then see what you have after that. But yeah, I mean, they can always get back together a year from now. If they realize they need to, like, piece them back together, they get back together for a Hall of Fame speech, you know, years down the road, whatever.
Danny Cochran says, if New Day split, do you finish this at WrestleMania? I mean, it would time it pretty well.
It would time it.
Where they break up at Survivor Series, a few months later is WrestleMania. Stay together. Be like John Cena. Never, ever turn. New Day rocks. I'm the good guy here. These two.
What?
Don't trust them.
Jack, you
still have the bus.
Jack, you still have your communion money, don't you? You there's not a bad bone in your body.
Nope, not a single one. All good. But that said, we covered the show. That was raw. I thought this was a fun episode. But everyone in the chat, let me know what you thought. And Justin, let me know your final thoughts and where can the world find you online.
Yeah, it was an okay show. I mean, keep in mind that the they're in Riyadh tonight. Half the roster, I think, went on to another European leg. Another leg of their international tour in Europe. I know Saudi Arabia's not in Europe. So, you know, you only have what you have with the roster. It's a lot of travel. So they did what they did. They certainly advanced storylines. Again, that's all you want. You just want stuff that matters. You don't want a pre-taped show in the can that, like, has no relevancy to the story. So it was what it was. Not the most exciting Raw, but it had stuff to talk about. And, I'm here to see the build to Survivor Series because there's a lot of intrigue that we've discussed. So follow me at Justin Labar. I'm here on Mondays with you fine people, and I'm co-hosting Busted Open every single Sunday, 9 a.m. to noon on Sirius XM.
Emily May, any final thoughts, and where can we find you online?
Yeah, it was a fun episode, obviously building to Survivor Series in a few weeks. You can follow me all on social media at Emily May Heller.
And I thought this, for being a pre-recorded show, the split roster, I thought this was fun. It went by quick. Like, I was like, it was one of these episodes where there's a 30 minutes left and I was like, oh wow, I gotta get ready to start doing this show soon. So I liked it. You can find me at Real Jack Farmer across all social media. I'm here on Mondays, I'm here on Wednesdays covering Raw and Dynamite, and also on the Wrestling Chatter you can check out, I just interviewed Alex Wright. We talked about all sorts of fun stuff there. Yes, I asked about the dancing,
but also Das Wonder Kid.
Yes,
did you do the dance?
Do the dance.
I did. Listen, if you can't see the hips, you're missing all the good stuff.
Come on, Jack, stand up.
We chatted about the dance, of course. I asked him his Mount Rushmore of European wrestlers. I asked him what it was like to do, what's the first thing he trains people at his school, and all sorts of fun stuff. So check that out. Also, make sure to follow at Wrestling Inc. for all the latest wrestling news. We'll be back on Wednesday to cover AEW Dynamite. We'll see you there. I'm hitting the end stream button now. Boop.
Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility, with digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.